in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power, oranges lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal, yellows scare, and green ones dare. That sci-fi love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation.
Jim
and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim Ford.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 601.
Tonight we're talking about Green Lantern Corps number 4.
Among other things, and hopefully all the among other things should be more enjoyable than Green Lantern Corps number 4. This might, as I was saying to Jim, this might be the Name That Tune episode. It's like, how little time can we actually need, or do we need to recap this story?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had gotten it down to
a word.
Four letters. You got it down to 5 letters. I don't know. I would say bad just to get it down to 3 letters, but there's some decent parts of this. So
this is true. So I'm going to, my internal goal is I'm going to try to do this in like about 3 minutes. So let's see. So let's just jump into it, because there's not a whole lot to really. There's not a lot. Again, common thread these days. Not a lot of meat on these bones. So we begin with one of the highlights of the issue. Guy. Thank God the guy is in this issue, because he does kind of make this. So Guy's freaking out because Jessica's giving him an assignment to babysit essentially a new recruit, who is Narf, who I like. He's like a little like lion cub lantern. Who I predict his special power is that he can change size. That's what I'm gambling on. That he can make himself, he can embiggen himself. So Guy and Narf head off to Necropia to look for help to try to find Starbreaker. It does not appear that he's expecting to find Evil Star there, that he's expecting to find someone else by his reaction. Maybe he is. It's kind of left up in the air. Meanwhile, we have Simon Kelly and Ellie Rose, and it's Kelly's birthday, she's just turning 12. You would think Simon would have known that, considering they had bonded before. She needs a new psionic battery, whatever the hell that is, and he has this idea that, by luck of the draw, Necropia is probably the place, if any place has one, that's the place to go. And Necropia is a dead Starro for anybody who cares. Well, in the attempts to get the psionic battery, the Enzo, who's kind of like Watto, I guess, that he's falls in love with Kelly's gauntlet immediately, and he wants it, and they're not going to give it up. He also doesn't like being shaken down, so he ends up booby trapping something, knocking both of them out. Some kind of, I'll get to the name of it at the end, some kind of mind thing that basically puts them in a dream state where they are having to face their worst fears, and if they don't get out, their brains are going to turn to putty and run out through all their orifices of their face, which, if we could only hope, that's exactly what happens with Simon. But so Guy and Narf kind of suffer the same fate, even though not, they're in better position because they get attacked by Evil Star, who doesn't like being shaken down either. He whips out the quantum destabilizer, which just reminds me of the ultimate nullifier, except it doesn't have that kind of effect, because between Narf and Guy, they're able to keep their bubble, their shield up, even though they get blown out of Necropia. And Ellie Rose is able to make a connection into Simon's mind. The mind maze is what this thing is called. Why she can't go into Kelly's mind, I guess we'll get an explanation for that. But she's trying to use Simon to connect with Kelly, so she can, maybe they can figure a way out of this place themselves. And when the issue ends with a scene, which we assume is Kelly looking down at this Green Lantern, who's screaming at her, "You have to destroy the glove. Destroy it before it destroys everything." And Kelly's going, that's not how this happened. This isn't right. And the next, Teen Lantern's origin, a lie, plus the return of Space Cabbie. Now, this issue was called Ride Along. Morgan Hampton and Jeremy Adams were the writers. V. Ken Marion and Monke Nahulpan were the artists. Arif Prianto, colorist. Dave Sharp, letterer. Passerin, Albert, and Prianto did were the cover artists. There were a whole bunch of varying cover artists. I'm not listing all these. Jillian Grant, assistant editor. Kathleen Wisniewski. Nesky is the editor, and Paul Kaminsky remains the group editor.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much did it.
There you go.
Good night, everybody. so like I said, for me, the good parts of this are Guy. Guy and Kilowog interacting, but Guy is Guy, and he's enjoyable.
Yes.
I like Narf. I think Narf is going to be – there's not much to go on here. There's something about Narf that seems like he's likable. And again, if I had to bet, I bet his power is that he can like embiggen himself and almost be like a full adult lion cub versus whatever he is now, in appearance at least, a full adult. But the coincidence of going to Necropia, I don't know. I'm sure that'll play out next issue. I kind of like seeing Evil Star. That was cool.
That was cool.
For the most part, I like the artwork. I don't really care much about Kelly. I don't care much about Simon. those are ongoing problems. I also wasn't overly shaken in my boots about Jessica telling Guy to get his ring hand after he slams it on the desk. Get it off the desk or else I'll move it for you. It's like, yeah, let's see how that goes. But other than that, I also must admit, even though it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, so they tie it in because of the Starbreaker reference, I kind of liked it. This issue, maybe it says a lot about the storyline, that I'm kind of glad this really has, on the surface, has almost nothing to do with the Fractured Spectrum.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a very good issue. Granted, the caveat is you have to want to read a story that focuses a lot on Simon and Kelly and the other one. I don't love those characters. I don't really want to spend a lot of time with them. However, reading through the book, it's like, well, this is kind of a good story for anybody that does really like those characters. So I have to give it credit for that. Like you said, the Guy stuff, the Kilowog stuff, that's really good. It was cool seeing Evil Star. Coincidentally, I actually just picked up the first appearance of Evil Star in the last week. So that was a fun coincidence.
Yes, it was.
The this guy Narf, I really don't like him right now. And I know you're probably right. He probably will get bigger and become a giant lion. And maybe he has multiple personalities, and the big version is the one that got the ring, and the small version is just his default, which is that would be a really weird and unique thing for a Green Lantern, I guess. But in this state, he doesn't seem like a Green Lantern. The fact that his name is Narf just makes me think of Snarf from the Thundercats.
Maybe on purpose.
Almost certainly, almost definitely. The thing about Simon and Kelly falling into that trap so easily, part of me is like, well, come on, guys, you didn't see this coming. And the other part of me is, well, it is Simon and Kelly, so. You know, and then when it ends, she sees the Green Lantern saying, destroy it. And, you know, this isn't how it happened. And no, she's absolutely right. That's not how it happened. The one that brought it wasn't a Green Lantern. I don't know. Maybe this will shed some light or retell her origin. Maybe they're updating it from the way that it used to be. I don't know. But realistically, though, we haven't really touched on her origin since her origin issue, right?
I don't think that's – I mean, I agree. I don't think we've been down that road. So, Yeah, I would absolutely agree. If you care about any of the – I mean, it's hard to believe anybody cares much about Ellie Rose, since we know she's, A, not really alive, and, B, she's only existed since War Journal. But yeah. If there are Kelly and Simon fans out there, and we know there are, that all 10 of you, that the reality is there's – obviously this would be it's a good character piece. They clearly have a bond, though it seems odd. I thought that Ellie Rose made the point of, hey, you guys go, I'll sit here in your construct car, because clearly you're trying to bond with her. And I was like, kind of would have figured they already did bond, considering that was the whole point of the Thorn run. But I get her point, and it's kind of nice that she's willing to step back. But it's really not a horrible issue by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that it's focusing on characters that I really don't care about.
Yes, yeah.
But it is kind of spreading the wealth around the way you would expect it to, or the way a Green Lantern Corps book should be. And I think that is another thing that works well, I think, in this issue.
I would agree with that. You know, I also wonder if Narf is somehow related to Nort.
I guess that's possible. You know, you could be right about that.
It's just something that popped into my head, so figure I'd throw it out there.
Yeah, that could be viable. That could actually be viable. Yeah, because maybe he is more dog-like than lion-like, even though the tail, I think, is cat. I guess it could go either way. I guess it could go either way. Yeah, I guess that's up in the air.
Yeah, you never know. Plus, the way that Nord has been drawn, like, so many different ways.
That is true. Sometimes he just looks like a fat, hairy dude, as opposed to, like, he's kind of a dog. I don't know.
I like that Jessica has the photo on her desk. I think that's, what, her sister?
Yeah, I think you were. Yeah, you are correct. I believe that. Now that I almost overlooked that, because that's in the upper right hand corner of the first panel. Yeah, that is true.
The art in this issue really has some nice, like, details, like small details that really accentuate my enjoyment of the book in general. I will give it credit for that. I don't love her costume, which it is what it is. I don't love the position that she's in, which is very weird for her to be in. I mean, yeah, she could be, but it seems like such a waste of her character. It's almost like, well, we don't know what to do with her, so let's throw her in this position just so that she has something to do. And I mean, she's more than capable, but it's like, you know, come on, really?
Yeah, I agree. That's we know from a foundational perspective, there's issues here. But I think giving some credit where credit has to be given is they're doing their best to, I think, to try to find something for all of these Earth Lanterns to do. And I think that's what it comes down to. Obviously, I'd rather Jessica be in this position than friggin' Joe. So, but I also do like the, of course, this also works because of Guy, but it works because Jessica knows Guy enough to play, you know, to play on his ego, saying, well, you know, we need someone to get some field experience. Some of these guys just need more field experience. Which is interesting that Narf would fall under that category, as opposed to, because nobody seems to think, like even you're talking about, nobody really seems to think much of this guy whatsoever. But yet Jessica's kind of throwing him into the category. It's like, well, from a training perspective, we think he's fine. He needs experience. So, but the fact that she plays it up with Guy, like, it's like, who could possibly give better field experience than being paired up with you? And it's like, yeah, you know, that does make a lot of sense. I am great.
Well, you know, the other thing is the part about that does make a little more sense than if anybody else was doing it is that out of everybody in the Corps, the person who understands fear and overcoming fear the best is Jessica.
That's true.
So, yeah. So you have this little character seems like he's afraid of a shadow, but she knows that deep down there's something to him that makes him a Green Lantern, and Guy is the one to bring it out, in her opinion. So I like that.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think so, at least as far as the psychology aspect of the position that she's in, Jessica's certainly kind of showing signs that, yeah, the guardians are the guardians under any circumstance. But, you know, whether she, quote unquote, deserved the position, whether she's written that, or whether she was, quote unquote, ready for the position or not, it seems like she does have some natural gifts for this position anyway, and understanding the psychology of who she's dealing with, and pushing the right buttons to get them to do what you want. She just seems to have that gift.
Mm-hmm. I really like the design of Necrocopia.
Yeah, I do too. That was nice.
I think there's an aspect of it that makes me think of Nowhere.
I was just going to say that. Yep.
It is very okay. We're gonna have this kind of space city built in the dead husk of something, you know, celestial almost. But it's still cool to look at. It looks like one of the ships is vaguely based off of an X-wing.
In that. Oh yeah, yeah, you're right on the bottom.
That design. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and it is. It may be completely irrelevant, but still, I thought it was interesting that Narf obviously knows about this place, and he knows about it, like how, because he starts telling the guy, well, like, do you know how this place came to be? And guy says, let's stop right there, because I really don't give a shit. but the fact that Narf knows all this, I mean, not that it necessarily is a big cosmic secret, the fact that he is at least well versed in, like, oh, in this place in particular. You know, maybe that may factor into why Narf got put on this assignment with Guy when Guy was clearly going here. This wasn't a random stop. Guy was going here for a particular reason.
The shot of the quantum destabilizer shooting at Guy and Narf, where you have, like, just the energy blast shoot, you know, tearing through deck after deck after deck. The details in that image are actually really cool. It's not like super detailed drawings, but there are things that are intentionally put in that are very cool. Gem, son of Saturn.
Yeah.
Like, what is that doing there? Like, is that going to be called up later, or is it just something that this person just threw in as a detail? I don't know.
Yeah, that you're right. That is interesting.
I'm not sure who the four at the table are.
No, on the surface, I didn't recognize them either.
My gut wants to say it's Gen 13, but I have no idea. I don't know why it would be Gen 13. I don't know, you know, if this artist has some tie to that, but I don't know. There's just this aspects of those characters that remind me of Gen 13, but it could be literally anybody.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if there's any payoff, even if it's not immediately, for any of these things. I agree. I think it was an interesting design or a creative decision when it came to the way some of these things are drawn.
Now, do you have a physical copy of this issue?
Not at the moment.
Yeah. I got the John Boy Myers cover. That's with Carol on the cover.
Oh, okay. I'm sure it's got to be better than the Kelly and Simon cover.
Yeah, I saw that, and I don't even remember what it looked like. No, there was that cover that I remember, and then there was this one, the John Boy Myers, obviously, and then there was another one with, I believe it was Kyle, which might have also been another John Boy Myers cover, but I can't remember. But that one was also really cool looking. But I saw the Star Sapphire one, and I'm like, nah, that's the one I'm going with.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you're buying it physically. It's like you might as well, at least, regardless of what's inside, you might as well get the cover that you like the most.
Absolutely, yeah. I have, you know, my comic wall that I throw up different issues for themes and whatnot, so that'll go up on my Green Lantern wall at some point.
Very cool.
Now, what else is going on, Mark?
Well, not all that much. I know you wanted to talk about some of the Green Lantern action figures, right?
Well, you know, I didn't actually realize that I was signing up to do an episode
and I know you know this, but you could have bailed because I was plowing ahead no matter what on this one. But
I know I figured, like, you were like, oh, you know, I may just, you know, hop on and do a, you know, quick recap of something or whatever. And I'm like, well, I could hop on and we could talk about maybe action figures, the Green Lantern action figures. And you're like, yeah, that sounds good. Me completely not realizing that I was also signing up to do the review of Green Lantern Corps after we had just talked about how uninterested in it I thought that you would be. So today you're like, no, you should definitely read it. I'm like, oh, I guess I should probably read it then.
Well, only because if you, and let's put it this way, if you didn't want to read it, then I would have just said, well, I will do that segment on my own, and then we will, one way or the other, no matter where it fits in the episode, then you and I will just talk about other stuff. And because it wouldn't have made a lot of sense for me to be doing a review, and it's like, nah, I didn't touch the effing thing. It's like, okay.
Well, I guess since I'm here, the thing that I did kind of want to mention, there was some thoughts that I had. You know what? The listener feedback, but the listener is me.
Okay.
The main Green Lantern book, I feel like you guys are, I think you're a little too hard on it. And it's not that I think that you're like trying to be too hard on it, but I think that the book, the way that it is not what you have set your expectations for. And by that, I mean that, like, because I've been reading a couple of the issues. I haven't read everything, but I have picked up a couple of issues here and there. And a lot of it, I go by your reviews and whatnot. But the issues that I was reading, especially recently, the story is, it's pretty good. And it's very reminiscent of, like, the Kyle run. It's not, like, yes, there is an end game that everything is working towards, and you guys, like, you're so trained by, like, all the writers that have been, you know, within the past, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years, whatever it's been, where they set a goal and you just barrel towards that goal as fast as possible, and then you know, then it's on to the next goal. And you guys have been, like, basically trained to expect a story like that. Whereas with Jeremy Adams, he's giving you a story where, okay, yeah, there's an end game, but the story that he's telling is not completely focused on that end game. It's about the character interactions on the way to that end game. So yeah, you may not like the time travel girl, or you may not want Superboy in the comic, but the way that those interactions are going, and then all of a sudden you have, what was it, Silver Scarab was the character?
I think that is correct.
These are just fun and interesting things that fill out the story in general, that make it fun to read. So while we all know what the end game is going to be, we know that Sorrow is going to build a battery, or they'll stop him at just before he finishes it, or whatever. That's it. That's the end game. We know that's the end game. If that is what you're looking for, then it's kind of, that's not really a fulfilling journey. The journey is the fun part, where you're focusing on the character interactions. This is why the Kyle run was so much fun to read, because it wasn't, you were waiting for Kyle to become Ion. Yes, Kyle eventually did become Ion, but that was never the goal. The goal was, okay, he has this power. Now, how does he deal with it, with between the power, his responsibilities, and his friends? And then how does he move on after that? And it was mostly a character piece. And this is essentially what we're getting now, but nobody is accepting it because it's not what comics are today. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know if I entirely 100% buy into all the narrative, but I do agree with you that I think people are not enjoying it because the journey along with the destination so far has not been satisfying. I think the first arc, which went on indefinitely, kind of poisoned the well, I think. And I think that this, as we know, the not so special special that launched Fractured Spectrum, obviously that was a major miscue as far as a momentum perspective.
Definitely.
But And speaking of what you're going with, maybe this is a good time. As you kind of brought some of these things up, let's do Monty's feedback because he talks about the all the Green Lantern books, and let's do this, and I'll do it in segments because some more I think of what we brought up will come up.
Mm-hmm.
So Monty said, 600, wow, that's a lot of episodes. Yeah, tell us about it. Quite the legacy, appropriately for the subject matter. I hope one day, while other casts come and go, Lantern cast will remain in some form or other and come to be seen in the same light as CGS and the like, though I already consider you as such. Y'all were my first, after all. Well, thanks, Monty. I'm sure Jim is proud that we're still here in some way, shape, or form, too.
I am.
Anyway, I've been listening to the early episodes again and happened to listen to both of your first appearances, and it reminded me of a question. Okay, I'm going to hold on to this one. I thought this was in a separate email. This one is specific to Chad and I.
I can answer for Chad. It's fine. I'm kidding.
But I was given just the question that he asked, I was giving some more thought to, so I'm going to asterisk this and come back. But the rest is all about the Green Lantern books. Mm-hmm. State of the books, in my opinion. Green Lantern. Bored with all of this, but it's okay because we're going to Gem World. No. Actually, they can bog off with that. I don't get a sci-fi book for girly teen fantasy. Also, with the media spotlight returning to us once again, they really need the flagship in better shape. Also, I quite like Connor Superboy, but we don't need supporting cast from other books when we have such an awesome and underused universe of Green Lanterns. I figure we'll talk about that one before we move on to Core. But it's not like I dislike Superboy. I like Superboy quite a bit. I just don't know what his real purpose is in the story. I guess he's kind of alluding to that too. It's like if you have other Green Lantern characters that theoretically could have been filling that role to help to pair up with Kyle to go off and do something. So instead, you're picking two characters. One we know who's not pretty well, but he's not a Green Lantern, and one nobody really knows. But do you have thoughts on those points or that point of his?
Yeah, I like it because of the fact that it shows that Kyle has other friends that he can call on for assistance. I like that it builds the Green Lantern mythos by including other characters. You were just talking about with all the cover episodes issues about how Cyborg Superman really became a Green Lantern villain and Mongol really became a Green Lantern villain. Well, it works the same way with good guys, with allies. We know that, yeah, they're all friends and Superman is friends with Hal and all that. And every once in a while you get a team up or a crossover or things like that, but it's like kind of surface level where if you include a couple of these characters on like an arc, then they're going on the journey with your Green Lantern point of view character. So you're incorporating them more into the mythos. Maybe the idea is that Connor is going to use a different ring. Like maybe he'll be blue or whatever. Who knows? But I don't think that it's detrimental to include characters that aren't just Green Lantern. Because if it's just Green Lantern, then it would be the Green Lantern Corps, which you have with the Green Lantern Corps and just Green Lanterns doing Green Lantern stuff. So why not have allies in the main book? Again, this circles back to the Kyle run, where Kyle had a bunch of allies that weren't Green Lanterns. Basically, everybody else wasn't a Green Lantern that he was friends with. His girlfriend was Donna Troy. He was friends with the Titans, stuff like that. It's just like world building.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. Conceptually or theoretically, there's nothing wrong with having non-Green Lanterns because we see that all the time. I mean, plus it brings in other readers, potentially. It brings in readers from other books. Green Lantern Corps, he says, aren't Hawk fans a little peeved that Thanagar blew up in a Green Lantern book? I would be if Oa were destroyed in Hawkman. Oa's been destroyed so many times, it probably has been destroyed.
Anyway, would we even know? Would it even matter?
between Mogo and Oa, they get screwed up all the time. Anyway,
Oa gets reconfigured so many times. They could blow it up in four other issues, and all the Guardians would be like, yeah, we fixed that.
Never mind. Anyway, I'm glad that's over because issue four was much better, focusing on actual Green Lantern stuff. But what was that cover all about? Kelly looks like Miles Morales in Krabs GL cosplay.
I don't know that cover.
Well, I think that's the one he's talking about, the cover that on the digital cover, the one with Kyle, the one with Kelly and Simon. I think the one that says Under Pressure. I'm thinking that's the one that he's talking about. Actually, if anything, I kind of see Simon more of as a Miles Morales costume duplicate more than Kelly. That gauntlet is so unique. It kind of just, for better or for worse, it kind of makes her stand out.
Oh, yes. This was inside the cover that I got. I didn't even think about it. Yeah, I don't like the way that Kelly's looks, but I think the way that it's drawn is good. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Green Lantern Dark, nah, getting tired on this one already. I hate the villainess and her whole way of speaking scrummy, etc. I don't care to see her defeated, as I don't want to see her at all. And let me do an absolute too, just so we can talk about both of these. Absolute Green Lantern, as you said, it's early to tell, but I'm enjoying this so far, along with Mosaic. It kind of answers a question I've had for a long time. What would Green Lantern be like if it were a Vertigo book? Thanks for your time, Monty.
Yeah, the Green Lantern Dark, I'm not reading. I'm listening to your recaps, and I enjoy your recaps, but I'm not drawn to that book enough to want to read it.
No, I agree.
The fact that it's an Elseworlds is kind of, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree. It should have been, like we've discussed, it should have just been a trade. They should have just made it, or it should have just been, same thing, but a different name. It should have just been an original graphic novel. They should have marketed it as that, and then you might have had some interest in, because it may very well read better when you know, with all seven issues side by side, but releasing seven issues every other month, too. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and not for nothing, but a Green Lantern book where the Green Lantern ring is not a Green Lantern ring, and the powers work differently, and everything is darker and more horror-themed. And then you also have Absolute Green Lantern, which is the exact same fucking thing. What the hell is that? Like, why would you release both of those things like at the same time?
I agree. I don't think from a planning perspective, it certainly would seem that there's some contradiction going on there. So,
and honestly, I think that Absolute Green Lantern is probably going to hit the final issue number of Green Lantern Dark before Green Lantern Dark does, the way that the schedule is.
I could do the math to see if that's right. We've had two issues of Absolute so far, and so that'd be it'd be 5 months down the road. And how many issues of Dark have we done? Four? Is it only four?
I believe so.
If it's only four, yeah, I think the math would be pretty much correct on that then, because yeah, I think that would. It might be close because of when they first came. Because of the alternating which month. Well, then again, it shouldn't. I was just thinking in my head because of the fact that you have the skip month for Dark, and where that falls based on, you know, when Green Lantern Absolute was first came out. But it shouldn't matter. I think your math is right. I think it'll be close, but I think, yeah, we'll probably would hit issue 7 of Absolute before we get the last issue of Green Lantern Dark.
Yeah, well, my point being, though, that there's going to be a month where Absolute Green Lantern and Green Lantern Dark are both released, and they both have the same number in the same month, even though Dark started last year.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I agree.
Absolute Green Lantern, I'm reading that. I am intrigued by it. I don't love it because I don't... It's like it's trying to trade on the goodwill of the Green Lantern mythology, but there's none of that actually there. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think that's a very good way of putting it, actually. It's we're it's based it's on expectation. We're expecting this and we're expecting that. And so far, we've gotten very little of the core concepts.
Mythos. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
of the core concepts of what we would expect a Green Lantern book to be.
The thing about the absolute Green Lantern book is, and you've mentioned this before, the way that Darkseid is woven into the reality. I hate Darkseid. I just hate him as a character. Literally, the only time that I ever enjoyed seeing Darkseid is when Superman beats him.
Oh, when
And
Doomsday beat the crap out of him in the Hunter Prey miniseries.
listen, that's great too. But yeah, like no, like Superman, like just kicking the absolute crap out of Darkseid is really the only time that I like to see Darkseid. So just the thing with the scene where it was a flashback and Darkseid just painted himself yellow to go up against the Green Lantern Corps. So ridiculous. Just so ridiculous. The character of Darkseid is so overblown, overdone. Oh, he's the most powerful thing. And if you kill him, then there's an extra essence of him outside of the universe. And the only way that anybody can beat him is because he's only using part of his essence. No. No. He sucks. He just sucks. So having an entire universe based off of something that's, right around that concept, I don't enjoy it. That said, taken on its own, the Green Lantern book, it's not bad. It's not the thing that I love the most. I'm reading it. I'm intrigued. I will watch to see where it goes. But I could easily see myself just completely losing interest and stopping reading at some point. Is it a limited series, the Green
No,
Lantern one?
as far as I know, it's they're ongoing. You would think there's an end game somewhere, but unless they really want to make this the whatchamacallit, the Marvel equivalent, whatever the hell that line is called.
Ultimate.
Ultimate line, yeah. So this could in theory go on, but I'm sure it'll be an end game for some other disgusting event that will be wrapped around Darkseid. I can understand that. It intrigues me now. Whatever happens, how bad they do Hal dirty will ultimately determine how a lot of how much I care about this book, 'cause
Yeah.
I think they pretty much did something similar to Barry in the Absolute Flash book from what I hear. And so if that's going to be that the MO for with the new editorial regime, the anti-DiDio group is like, hey, we're gonna make sure we phase out all the Silver Age characters as much as we can. Then, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we have to make a decision if we are gonna talk about toys at all, because this would be the time if we're going to do it. If we don't, or else we just kick the can, because I do have a few other things I can throw out there just to kind of like wrap to make sure that this episode has a little more meat on the bone anyway, because I planned on doing it. But if you want to talk toys, we can for like a 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, I guess we'll touch on the toys, what's coming out lately, just because in case anybody out there is not following what's coming out and they're curious, I guess it would be good to throw it out there.
Yeah, I would agree. We know that the McFarlane, that armored Hal Jordan from Reign of the Superman, that should conceptually is supposed to be out this month at some point. Even though we are getting down to the nitty-gritty when it comes to how much time they have to make that a reality. I see. I this is funny. Speaking of the Target exclusive, there's a Target exclusive Revenge of the Green Lanterns Cyborg Superman, which isn't overly, it's not really accurate costume wise, but he doesn't seem like he has any Green Lantern rings either. But the interesting thing is, I completely lost sight of the fact that they actually released a regular version of Cyborg Superman for order. Like,
Really?
yes, they did. So you didn't know it either.
No, I knew.
Oh, you
You
knew it
didn't know
all.
about
I'm
that?
sorry. Yeah, I didn't know that at all.
Okay, so we had talked about this, me and you, like off of, you know, recording a few weeks ago, and I had mentioned to you, I thought that I had clarified it, but they had a case that you could have ordered, and in that case there were supposed to be two Cyborg Superman figures.
Oh, you're right. That's why it was hard to find.
Yeah. So, but the thing was, like, none of the stores had that on pre-order. Like, there was Entertainment Earth that had the case on pre-order.
GameStop, I think, did, from what I read today.
GameStop they have an exclusive Cyborg Superman figure with a cloth cape that you could have pre-ordered.
Oh, okay, but it still would have been classic Cyborg Superman if you ordered the case. It just wouldn't have been the one with the cape, but the cloth cape.
As far as I know, because it is a little hazy because nobody's gotten those yet. That was all a pre-order. Supposedly the GameStop Cyborg Superman had the cloth cape. The Cyborg Superman that came in the case that was sold through Entertainment Earth maybe didn't have the cloth cape, and Target has a gold label exclusive with the Revenge of the Green Lanterns red costume Cyborg Superman, which I haven't seen in package pictures of that yet. So he may come with an alternate hand with Green Lantern rings.
That's what I'm hoping.
But the figure that they've shown images of outside of the package, he does not have Green Lantern rings. So as it is, you cannot recreate that cover unless you sculpt on your own Green Lantern rings. But it's a cool looking figure. It's a good Cyborg Superman. I wish that I could have pre-ordered just the regular one, because the one from GameStop was like up and completely sold out within an hour, and that's only if you knew that it was there. And like that day, I just didn't happen to check Instagram during that hour, and it was gone. The other Green Lantern related figure that GameStop had for pre-order that nobody else did was Jade. And same thing, it was up for pre-order for like, I don't know, an hour or so, completely sold out. And then they got a few more in like the next day or that evening or whatever, again, completely sold out. That's popping up a couple of different places. But the whole thing with McFarlane Toys and GameStop, they must have some kind of relationship where he's going extra heavy promoting them, because he did an in-store signing in, I want to say, LA a couple of weeks ago, and they've been getting more exclusive product from him. So listen, he's got to set himself up for after next year when he loses the DC license. So I'm sure that's where this is all focused around, with so many things happening with GameStop lately. But just things to note.
And to be fair, I mean, I did look and I did see this on eBay, and there's some that are not ridiculously overpriced. But the reality is, it's a good sculpt, but it's not a great sculpt. It's not as good as the DC Direct sculpt.
Well, nothing is.
No, I know, but I'm saying if I'm gonna go out and try to track something down, I mean, within the aftermarket, it's got to be really good. Just like as you and I discussed, the whole idea of whether to pull the trigger on that Eradicator that's going to be coming out in the same wave as the Hal Jordan.
Yeah,
it's still not a Reign of the Superman accurate figure. So the reality is, it is highly debatable whether you actually need it, especially if you happen to have either the Mattel version, or which was still pretty good, or obviously the DC Direct Eradicator Last Son of Krypton figure, which was probably the best one they've ever released so far.
The McFarlane Toys action figures in general, I like them. I think the articulation is really nice. The paint is really nice. The designs they're not always super accurate, and you just kind of have to accept what you get. The DC Direct Cyborg Superman, the DC Direct Eradicator, like those figures, they're essentially perfect, except for the fact that the articulation is somewhat limited. And also, for DC Direct figures, there was an issue as far as sometimes they would be brittle. So the articulation that you had, all of a sudden you may snap off an arm or a limb or something like that.
And the foot joints are weak often. Yeah. Which is still true, which is not just exclusively a DC Direct problem. I mean, it just seems in the desire to have as much articulation as possible, they don't realize that that's probably one area where it'd be better to have a little bit less articulation, but make it be sturdier, so because you know that's what's going to completely determine whether a figure is going to stand upright or not.
I think that there is a lot of potential for increases in technology to maybe make those foot joints a little more complicated, but a lot more sturdy and still give you the articulation that you need. But that's an argument for another day. The DC Direct figures, for what they are, if you're going to keep them in the package, they look perfect. They're perfect 3D representations of the comic characters. Those have also been, you know, they made them, how long is it now? 20, 25 years, something like that?
I think it's about 20. For some reason, I think it was during the time Green Lantern Rebirth. So 2021. I think it was 2004 in my mind. I think that's when the Reign of the Superman figures came out.
So at 20 years ago, that, from those action figures to now, is the same amount of time from He-Man and Thundercats to when those action figures came out.
But you're correct, just generally speaking. Hopefully the technology will continue to improve, at least in certain areas, because that is critical. I mean, having to, especially since they gave you these crappy bases like in McFarlane, which only one figure fits on it, one foot fits on it anyway. So all the weight really is, I mean, you can angle it. Obviously, you angle it so some of the weight's supported by the back foot. But as far as the hole in the foot, that it's really just one foot and then one joint that's kind of holding everything together.
Mm. Yeah. While I don't always love every aspect of the McFarlane toys, I do give the line a lot of credit for the character selection. It's something like the variations that he rolls out with, it's because his company is smaller and he can get away with doing these variants that Mattel, they didn't really do stuff like that. I think like some of the smallest runs of figures that they had were the figures that were based off of likenesses. The Wonder Woman off of Linda Carter, the Flash off of John Wesley Shipp, the Batman, the Superman, stuff like that. That stuff, really, really cool figures that they were drastically underproduced. And I think that was less because they were trying to make a more limited collectible and more because there just wasn't that much of a draw for the action figures at those times that they were producing. So they were just making less. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden you put the time and resources into designing a really cool figure that everybody wants. And that's the one that you hold back on. But that's my own aggravation because I wanted one of those Flash figures.
I get it. yeah. To me, the biggest issue with McFarlane, besides the fact that yes, they are not making accurate sculpts as they could, is the fact that they kind of flood them. They pick characters that they know there's some interest in, and they always give you like the worst version of the character first because they know people are going to just go out there and buy it in droves, and then start working their way towards more of the sculpt and more of the costume people actually want, like what they did with all the Kyles.
Yes, and that is an accurate criticism. However, if people didn't buy those Kyles, then it would not have warranted the better versions of the Kyles. The like the first Kyle that we got, like that was the more modern costume, correct?
I'm trying to remember the time frame. I'm trying to remember if that was like the Countdown to Infinite Crisis Kyle was the one after he was Ion the the last time. I don't know.
I feel like the first figure of Kyle that they put out, I can't remember if it was the more modern one or his like first appearance.
It wasn't his first appearance. That came after.
Yeah. So they made an action figure based off of a character who kind of wasn't really in the limelight that much at that time. And they gave people the most recent costume of it, because why wouldn't you? And it sold like gangbusters. So they said, oh, you know what? There's clearly interest in this character. Let's make a first appearance. So they made the original Kyle, and it's pretty great. You know, like the colors could have been better, but it was a pretty good figure. And then they said, okay, well, people really like this character, so we don't have to do too much tooling. Here's the Blue Lantern version. And then, okay, well, we want to make a Kilowog, but the only way to justify the cost of a Kilowog is to pair it with an action figure that we already have all the tooling for. So let's do Kyle, but let's listen to those critiques and do him in a slightly better green. So, yeah, it sucks that you have to buy yet another Kyle to get Kilowog, but you'd really want Kilowog, and this is the only way we could do it. And now also we're fixing our mistakes with the old Kyle. So it's like, on the one hand, yes, you're completely right. You're forcing people to buy the worst versions first before you get to the better versions. But at the same time, it's like, it is still kind of justified in how his business model works. None of this ever would have been made had people not bought the most current version of Kyle at the time, which, yeah, it's not the best version, but it's the one that kind of makes the most sense from a business standpoint outside of just being a fan of Kyle Rayner.
No, I agree. I mean, from a business model perspective, you do understand that, I mean, it's smart on that level. It can be annoying, and eventually you could push it too far and people would just say, nope, I'm going to wait because I know what you guys are going to do. Mm-hmm. But but as long as people continue to buy in that way, then yeah, they're smart. It's like, hey, so like we'll put Sinestro out in his normal, in his old school costume first before we do, you know, and we keep pushing it off before we finally give you Sinestro like in his Sinestro core costume, which is what everybody wants. But yeah, but I get it. I absolutely get it.
Is that about it?
For figures, yeah. Let me just mention how awesome Rom is. Rom is awesome. I think the only critique I probably would have would be I haven't looked at a lot of pictures lately from the comics to do a complete apples to apples, but my instinct tells me that the weapons are not quite as big per capita as they actually were in the book, that the neutralizer and the analyzer are not as big as they actually were, considering Rom is also ginormous in the big picture, and I think the weapons were pretty sizable. And I'm remembering what they look like in other characters' hands and things like that. It's more of a nitpick, I think, with the analyzer. For some reason, that's the one that strikes me as maybe it's not quite. But as far as the sculpt, oh my God, it's fantastic. It is absolute fantastic figure. Again, and the sliding scale, literally, that he should be taller based on if you're comparing him or putting him in the same line as other 6-inch figures, that he should be taller, because Rom, I forget how tall Rom was in the books. He was, I'm going to say he was at least 7 or 8 feet in the books, because I think there were very few Marvel characters that were anywhere near as tall as mm-hmm. Rom. He kind of towered over almost everybody. I think he was taller than the Hulk too. So but as far as a toy goes, that's fantastic. Very happy with that.
The weapons are probably sized the way they are because of the packaging. They had to fit
probably the packaging. Probably I would think that's the case. I swapped out one hand just so he basically had two hands that could hold mm-hmm. weapons. So I had the analyzer in one hand and the neutralizer in another. But it is a fantastic figure, and by almost all accounts of seeing anybody who, and the Knicks lost. Seeing embarrassing. They were up by 17 points in the fourth quarter. But by all accounts, it seems like everybody who reviewed that figure rave about it. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So moving on to the final, my final things of business. I don't know if you saw the Jurassic Park trailer, Jurassic World trailer today.
Oh, no.
I did. Talk about a franchise that I'm completely numb to, that does nothing for me, gets no visceral reaction whatsoever. It's like I watched this trailer, and by objectively speaking, it's a superior trailer to the teaser. But I don't care. I like dinosaurs, and I like Scarlett Johansson. To me, she still seems horribly miscast in this role. I don't believe it. It just, I don't know. It's, and going back to a research facility and having some kind of mutant dinosaur either, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't, especially because it is the second sight. So, you know, so, and we already know all the classic characters, the ones that survived, like Rexy were in the wild anyway and taken off the island, the real island with Nubar or whatever before it died, before it, you know, blew up or sank with the volcano or whatever. So it's not even, I don't know. I mean, Chad's like super invested, so he'll probably like the trailer because like the Superman trailer. He'll like the Superman trailer or the Jurassic Park trailer to a certain extent because he's just invested in the franchise and it's right. Almost like he can't do any. And I will probably see this, but I don't have any passion about this franchise, and it's somewhat it's kind of surprising how numb and how empty my soul is when it comes to seeing this, considering how much I like dinosaurs. And it's like, I don't care. It's like, I think probably partially because of the horrible marketing campaign for the last one, when they marketed, oh, this is the last one, even though that's not, even though they, Trevorrow and everybody who was making the movie, it's like, oh, we never thought it was the last one. That was like a complete marketing thing.
Yeah, I still haven't even seen the last one.
It's pretty bad.
It just is pretty don't bad. Care. Yeah, like after it was dinosaur auction site movie, that just like sapped all of my goodwill. I just don't care about that last one. I might go see this just because it's an island and dinosaurs and Scarlett Johansson. And I like the other guy from Bridgerton. He's actually really good. But I don't really have a lot of expectations for this movie. Like I would be going in with like, you know, bottom of the barrel expectations. So
I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of funny. It's almost easy to forget that this thing comes out in July because it's kind of sandwiched. I think it's like sandwiched between Superman and
Fantastic Four.
So I think so. But yeah, so I just added that one on since I saw it today. So the one thing I do want to talk, the final thing, and we wrap it up, is what I've seen. So I saw Final Destination Bloodlines. Are you a fan of this franchise, Jim?
I am not. I have not ever seen any of them.
Okay. So with Final Destination Bloodlines, I think it's fine. I don't quite understand why everybody's going goo-goo gaga over it, especially critics. I'm really quite perplexed to see why critics of all the Final Destination movies, this is the one that they somehow think is the creme de la creme. And the audience score is pretty high on this on Rotten Tomatoes, too. At best, I would say I could only make an argument that maybe out of the six, this is number four. And that's if I'm really stretching it, because I would have to wait. I would have to watch part five again next to part six. So hopefully HBO won't lose all the Final Destination franchise in a few months when this movie comes on. So I can actually watch five and six together just to see back to back if I do think it's better than five. But it's only better than four, which everybody hates. That's the only one I would conclusively, decisively say, oh yeah, it's better than four, which was the Final Destination. But the one thing I do want to talk about briefly with this movie, and it has nothing to do with the actual, really has nothing to do with the events of this movie, so it's not truly a spoiler, because it's a spoiler for you because you haven't watched any of them, but you obviously don't care. But for anybody who's watched Final Destination movies, this isn't a spoiler, because these are things that we already know. It's just that we know if you've watched them, but this confirms certain things that were implied and were in movies, but they didn't make it so black and white. So this movie gives you two definitive ways to survive. One, they talked about it in the last movie, which was if you're the next person supposed to die, and you kill somebody or cause somebody's death, that's open to interpretation exactly how directly you have to be. But let's just, but, and I think that's, and I think that's on purpose because they're probably going to explore that angle more because it's much easier to do this one. But let's just say you cause someone's death without, even without malicious intent. But if you cause somebody's death, you inherit the time they have left, which of course is good if they have 30 years. But if they have a day, then it doesn't really buy you much. But all it does is it takes you off the list until that time is up, and then it boomerangs on, it goes to the next person on the list. So you get pushed out of the loop. It doesn't break the chain. It just gets you out of the chain for as long as that time left that you've taken. Now, the other thing they do confirm, which I like because my favorite character, this relates to my favorite character in the franchise, is that the other way to survive, and this breaks the chain, it stops, not only does it save you, but it saves whoever is supposed to follow you on death's list, is if you die, but you get better. Then, so if you flatline and somebody brings you back, not only does it save you, but it breaks that individual chain. And they confirm that because that's what happened to Kimberly at the end of part two. And Kimberly's like Darth Maul. She's a Darth Maul of this franchise. I thought about this because, you know, Darth Maul was killed off, I was going to say unceremoniously, but it kind of was ceremoniously because he was given a really pretty graphic and memorable death. But mostly just because George Lucas didn't want him to have to take over the prequels the way he felt Darth Vader took over the sequel, the original trilogy, which is somewhat contradictory since if he really knew Darth Vader was the main character. You would think that wouldn't be a bad thing, but I think honestly it was more because he saw Vader as this pathetic lackey figure and people were thinking, hey, Vader's so cool. But he didn't want Darth Maul overshadowing the prequels. So they killed him off. But either on his own or with Dave Filoni whispering in his ear, he realized this was a mistake. And obviously Darth Maul was resurrected for the Clone Wars and he survived into Rebels. And if George Lucas had gotten to do his sequels, his own sequel trilogy, or if Disney had actually used the treatments that he used, Darth Maul was going to be the bad guy. He was the main bad guy in the trilogy. So Darth Maul went from being dead and people trying to just push him off and we don't want him to be a big deal, to all of a sudden, hey, he had a long-term future, even longer than it turned out he did get because of Disney being stupid. But Kimberly was like that too, only from the perspective that twice in Final Destination 3, they tried to kill Kimberly off because they tried to get the two survivors, her and the state trooper, that were the only two characters left at the end of 2, that she broke the chain and the reason why they survived. The director of 3 wanted both of them to be on the subway train, which ended the events of part 3, which basically was going to resolve all the loose ends from movies 1 through 3, so there was going to be nobody left from the first 3 movies. And the actors were going to come back, they just couldn't make it work. They couldn't arrange the schedule. Then, on the DVD extra for part 3, partially because they couldn't actually film the scene to end the movie like they wanted, there's a DVD extra, like in an interactive game, which has like clips. It's like a choose your own adventure thing, and it has clues and different things. And there's like a newspaper clip which indicates Kimberly and the cop died. But of course, that wasn't canon. So all that moved us to this movie, Bloodlines, where it's confirmed that, yeah, Kimberly is the one. Kimberly is the one who broke the chain, and she's the only one to ever beat it. So from a character that survived, but they tried to kill a lot, but now she's like the gold standard to how to survive. Which is not easy to do. That's kind of pointed out by Tony Todd and the late great Tony Todd in his final appearance in the franchise. That's not as easy to pull off as, you know, it's not like she did it on purpose. She didn't plan on dying and coming back. She just died and she got resuscitated at the hospital. But that's not easy to do. But I thought those were the most interesting things about Final Destination Bloodlines, is what it said, and it gave you much more definition about certain aspects and rules to the franchise until somebody else comes along and screws it up. But I thought that was interesting. But, and that's all I got. You have anything you want to push, Jim, before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I haven't really seen much. I watched the movie The Nonas on Netflix.
I've heard about that.
Who's
cute. Who's in that?
Vince Vaughn. Is it Linda Cardellini?
Okay.
The one from Hawkeye?
Yes.
And Sopranos, the therapist?
Yep.
And
Lorraine Bracco?
Yes. And Susan Sarandon? And I think one other person that I don't remember. But oh, and also Joe Mangione.
Okay.
And the other one from Sopranos, the
I'm looking at the
was it Joey's girlfriend?
Oh, Drea de Mateo.
I believe it's her.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast now.
Yeah. No, it's a cute movie. It's based off of an actual restaurant on Staten Island, dramatized a bit, but it's a fun kind of feel good story. That's about it. I don't watch a lot of movies. That was one that Lauren put on, and I just happened to be sitting next to her, so it's okay. I guess I'm in for it now. So that's about it. Everything else is going good. And oh, the one thing that I will point out before you do the wrap up is that if anybody was listening to the cover to cover episode 600, after the credits roll, there's more lists. Dan and I, we both recorded our own lists, and those went after the credits. So if you stop before the credits like I normally do, then you have extra bonus stuff to listen to. So go check it out.
Hopefully people didn't, because there's so much time left as you get into the credits. If people were looking at the timestamp, then they might. And plus, I did push it at least on for the website and stuff like that. I mentioned the fact that but you were correct. It's always a good disclaimer, because we usually don't have stuff post credit. And this time we did. So good stuff, too. As it mm-hmm. is, it was a fun episode. One of the more fun episodes we've done lately, I must admit.
Yeah. Oh, you know, and the other thing is, I will point out two things. One, congratulations on 600 episodes.
Thank you.
And two,
congratulations to you too, Jim.
Yeah, right. And two, I did not realize that you had put them in order. So mine is just completely random. And I think I'm the only one who did it randomly. That's it.
Didn't have to be in order. I mean, it just made sense from a countdown perspective for Chad. For Chad and I to do it. All right. So lanterncast.com, lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, #GLcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think. Thanks for filling in for Chad.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
You have to come back. Have to come back soon. See Fantastic Four or Superman. Oh, even Super, one of the two. See one
I,
of them.
I will see both. I will definitely see both. I may see Jurassic Park, but I'll definitely be seeing Superman and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I think those are the next ones up. I mean, it kind of sucks we didn't have a Thunderbolts episode, but I don't necessarily know if it really called for one. It would have been cool to do, but one way or the other, Fantastic Four is definitely going to be bigger, just because of the fact that, heaven forbid, that movie suffers the same fate as Captain America and Thunderbolts. Then Marvel is going to be hemorrhaging at the seams.
That's not my money.
I know that is true, and you do kind of reap what you sow, since with Kevin Feige practicing that great, hey, if it ain't broke, let's fix it philosophy. Nice job, Kevin.
Oh, man. I never met a bridge I didn't burn.
I know. It's like, wow. It's like, great strategy. And then let's just blame it on, oh, you know, it's all the content for Disney Plus. It's like,
yeah, we made too many things.
You knew that when you were building the game plan for phases 4 and 5, because Disney Plus didn't even premiere until 2019. So you already knew you were going to. So it's what you picked. It's not necessarily how much you picked. It's what you picked that was a big problem. But again, there's going to be an epic episode on phases 4 through 6. It's coming in another year or so, because Lord knows. But,
oh, man, if Fantastic Four does poorly, they're going to regret it eternally. wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. All right. Good night, everybody.
So long.